Well, good morning. Good morning to Jeff's family and to any other people we have visiting and all you regular people. If you don't like the sermon this morning, my name is Sean. And if you do, my name is Kyle. Sean and Nancy and Pam and Greg are flying back today so we can keep them in our prayers. And it's really good to see Jerry this morning. Jerry, we're really glad that you're back with us, and we need to keep praying for her as well. We're continuing our series on wisdom, and this is week two of our little detour studying wisdom in the book of James. And so last week we looked at wisdom through trials from James chapter 1. This morning we're looking at the fruit of wisdom from James chapter 3. So go ahead and turn over there if you haven't yet. So there are lots of ways that we as a society, as the world, measure wisdom. There's a lot of false and misleading ways, though. One way, perhaps, is just a good old-fashioned game of Jeopardy. Any Jeopardy fans out there? Yeah? I guess that was in the form of a question, so that works. We could take an IQ test. That's kind of more knowledge. It's not really wisdom, right? We could see who could write the best fortune cookie phrase or self-help book. But again, that maybe not be the wisdom we're talking about. We could go physical, and we could measure everyone's cranial capacity, and we could see who has the biggest head this morning. But again, that's not really wisdom. You know, most of the ways the world views wisdom is, or knowledge, I guess also, is comparative. We like to compare ourselves to others. And so this morning, our question from James is, who among you is wise and understanding? Who among you is wise and understanding? Now, I don't think that's a raise your hand kind of a question, okay? I think what James is doing is he's asking this rhetorical question to really introduce his next topic and to focus on wisdom. And he's trying to help us identify truly wise people or to see if we really have wisdom in our lives. And he says, He basically answers this question right away. You know, this is one of those, if you're a preacher, it's usually best not to, like, give away the ending right at the beginning of a sermon because then people stop listening, but he kind of does that. So he says, let this person show it by their good behavior, deeds done in the gentleness or humility of wisdom. So notice right off the bat that for James, wisdom is less about head stuff and a lot more about how you live your life. It's evident. It's demonstrated by your life. It's very practical. And it's done through goodness and humility. Wisdom is something that is shown. So when he asks the question, who among you is wise, he doesn't go to an IQ test or Bible Jeopardy. He wants to see it in our lives. And this morning, he's going to demonstrate, I think, what he's getting to is where's your wisdom coming from? And one of the markers of true wisdom that he mentions right off the bat, which is interesting, is humility. And it's kind of paradoxical, I think. The paradox of wisdom is that true wisdom is shown in humility. You know, maybe you've heard the phrase humble brag before. You know, it's like where you're saying something really good about yourself, but you're trying to do it in a very humble way. You know, for James, true wisdom is expressed through humility. So a good marker right off the bat to whether someone is living a life that demonstrates wisdom is, are they a humble person? So it's an interesting paradox. And in fact, in We talked last week about how James is kind of the wisdom literature of the New Testament. He draws a lot from Proverbs and a lot from the Sermon on the Mount. So in Proverbs 26, I'm sure this is kind of ringing in the people's ears as they're listening. There is more hope for fools than for people who think they are wise. So again, there's this humility aspect of wisdom. And so James is going to demonstrate two sources of wisdom. He's going to show us the source of wisdom, its fruit, and then what its ultimate outcome is, or harvest, I guess you could say. And he's kind of playing off of the section before and getting ready for the section after. So before this, he's talking about leaders and teachers and about the tongue and just the power of our words. And then he gets to wisdom, and he's going to show how that's lived out in our lives. And then after that, he's going to start talking a little bit about conflicts with one another, submission to God. So it all kind of flows together. So halfway through his letter, though, James pauses to talk about the source of wisdom. And the first source that he introduces is what I guess we could call wisdom from below. Now, he never actually uses that phrase, wisdom from below, but I think we can kind of gather that by how he describes this first kind of wisdom. And he uses three words to describe it there in verse 15 of chapter 3. This wisdom is earthly, unspiritual, or natural, and demonic. And so these three words, they kind of say the same thing in slightly different ways. So the first, earthly. By that, I think what he means is worldly, as in it's restricted to the realm of the world. In other words, it's not heavenly. So this kind of wisdom, this first kind of wisdom, is really limited to the realm of the world. It's not a heavenly source. The second word, unspiritual or natural, I think basically means fleshly. So it's mere human, it's man-made wisdom. Again, the point is it's not from God. And the third is demonic, which sounds pretty harsh. Basically, it's evil. Ultimately, this wisdom, its ultimate source, is from the enemy and not from God. So again, you can see how they're all kind of saying slightly the same thing. And so I was thinking, you know, what's a good example of this kind of wisdom, at least that we see in Scripture? And I think real early on we can see something. I think about the Tower of Babel. When I read the Tower of Babel, that little section in Genesis 11, at first it doesn't really sound all that bad, right? So here's from verse 4. Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. So, in that little story, I think we see some nuggets of what seems to be wisdom, right? So there's these people that want to build a city, probably for protection and community, with towers, or a tower, and they want to make a name for themselves. They want to be known. They don't want to be scattered. They want to be unified. And so, on the surface level, this sounds like a fairly wise thing to do, rather than living scattered as nomads with no protection. I mean, doesn't that kind of sound like a good thing? But when you dig a little deeper, the author basically kind of leads us readers to realize, well, this probably actually isn't a very good idea. Because I think when you dig a little deeper, you can see that they probably had some selfish motivation. They want to make a name for themselves. You know, I guess the question is, where is God in all of this? Where is their reliance upon God? You know, why are they building this tower that stretches to the heavens? So perhaps the reason that this isn't really wisdom from God is, and it just sounds like maybe a good thing, is because it is ultimately selfish. They're trying to lift themselves up. So it's not true wisdom, this wisdom from below, as we're calling it. And ultimately, its fruit is selfishness, bitterness, or bitter envy. And it's really interesting that James, we've kind of been calling it wisdom from below. James actually doesn't even call it wisdom. So you might notice in at least in the NIV translation, it's kind of got quotations around the word wisdom. That's because in the Greek, James doesn't even use the noun Sophia for wisdom to describe it. He literally says, it is not this, or it is not her. Wisdom is usually portrayed as a feminine. It's a feminine noun also. So he doesn't even actually call it wisdom. So again, this is wisdom with quotes around it. And so James says that the fruit of wisdom is selfishness, bitterness, envy. This is wisdom that comes from below, from humans, from limited to the earthly realm. And I have kind of a funny example of this. So Rebecca and I, when we started dating, and she transferred schools to be with me at Harding. And at Harding, every semester you have to pick a chapel seat, okay? So, and every day you sit in that seat, and you get to choose where you sit. So I had just gotten back from a semester in Greece, so in the fall we're starting off together. And as a freshman, I had seen a lot of couples sit next together in chapel. You know, how fun is that? Every day you get to sit next to your boyfriend or girlfriend. But then what happens sometimes is that they break up, right? And then you have the awkwardness of sitting next to each other the rest, or really just getting on academic probation is what ends up happening, because you don't go to chapel. So can you see where this one's going? All right, so when it was time to pick our chapel seat, I told Rebecca, in my wisdom, that maybe we shouldn't sit next to each other, because, you know, what if we break up? What if this doesn't, you know, we don't want that to be awkward. Not to mention that you're transferring schools across the nation to come be with me. And she told me I had to mention that not only did we not sit next to each other, but I actually sat with my friends from Greece because we had just gone studied abroad, and they happened to be female people, and so that kind of made it a little bit worse there. So anyways, you know, I was thinking, you know, this might be a wise thing to do, that we have a little bit of separation so that we avoid some awkwardness. But I think you can see at the root of that was not humility, but selfishness, maybe a little bit of fear as well. So this is what wisdom from below produces, and really it's driven by, or you see it a lot in this boastfulness or people who are in denial of the truth, as James says, and ultimately what it leads to. So this is, I guess you could say, the harvest. James says is disorder or chaos, and every kind of evil practice. So when you harbor this jealousy, when you harbor this envy, and your source for wisdom is not from God, ultimately what you're going to reap is disorder and chaos and unrighteousness. So a good thing to do, maybe to see like how this is evident in your life, what kind of wisdom you're displaying, is to look at your life and see what kind of fruit it's producing. Do you have a lot of financial strife? And is that something that's outside of you, or is that maybe stemming from something that you're doing, the choices you're making? I mean, sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes it's not what you're doing. Of course, we got to remember that. But maybe Maybe it is. Maybe there's family stress or unhealthy relationships. There's disorder and chaos, or there's rivalry, a sense of comparing my life to yours or to someone else's. This is the fruit of life without wisdom, or what, you know, wisdom. But in contrast, James tells us another source, or really the true source of wisdom, and that is wisdom that's from above. And so we need to kind of talk about what does this mean, from above. I mean, a lot of times I like to ask, you know, when I say hello, I say, "What's up?" And I've got a lot of snarky teenagers who often reply, "The sky," or "The ceiling," because it's above, you know, "What's up?" So that's not exactly what he's talking about, but it's the sense of the heavenly. So if you look back in chapter 1, verse 17, he's already kind of introduced or hinted at this idea of from above. He says, "Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow." So this idea from above means it's something that's from the Father. It's a good gift. And so this wisdom from above is a good gift. It's coming down from the Father. So the ultimate source of this wisdom from above is God. And we can see an example of what that wisdom looks like all over James. You know, I mentioned there's a lot of one-liners in the book of James that help the readers remember them. So if you continue reading in 17 down at 19, "This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." So quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to become angry. A good example of what that kind of wisdom looks like. And what's interesting, and we'll look at this in a little bit, is that a lot of time, at least I've seen, especially like on Facebook and other areas where it's real easy to kind of hide behind a keyboard and say whatever we think, a lot of times we might be saying things that are God's, you know, capital T truth, but it's not said in wisdom. Because again, he just said we should be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to become angry. So just because we might be saying the right things doesn't necessarily mean that we have wisdom, wisdom from above. So he goes on to talk about the fruit of this wisdom. What does it produce in our lives when we are living out God's wisdom? And he lists off a lot of different things, but the first one he mentions is that it is pure. And I don't necessarily know. I'm assuming this is not like an exhaustive list, and it's hard to really understand why pure is the first one. I think a lot of them flow out of this, but I think it's the sense that for it to be God's wisdom, it's got to be, as he said earlier in verse or chapter 1, verse 27, it's unstained by the world. You know, you can't have some of God's wisdom, some of man's wisdom, some of my own wisdom. You know, this, it's pure, it's from God. That's the only source, that this wisdom is from God. And then he lists off, you know, five or so other things that wisdom is. This is the evidence of wisdom in your life, and that is that it's peaceable, so it's not chaotic or disorderly or contentious. It's considerate of others. You know, one phrase that I don't really like, to be honest, is the truth hurts. The truth hurts. You know, I understand that sometimes the truth can be very plain, and sometimes it can be confrontational in my life, but I don't really know if the truth should really hurt. That seems like to be taken at a step farther than I think it should. The truth is convicting, but the truth hurts. I don't really like that, because there's not very much of that sense that I get when I read this list of peaceable, considerate, willing to yield, I mean, that's another one. You know, how many times on Facebook when people are typing in wisdom do you see people say, you know, that was actually a pretty good point. I think I might actually listen to what you have to say about that. No, I mean, but wisdom is willing to yield or to God and to others. It's not power-oriented. It's full of mercy and good fruits. So again, wisdom is demonstrated by one's actions, and it produces more fruit that is good. And then he kind of reminds the readers with these next two, impartial and not hypocritical, of what he just talked about in chapter 2. So in chapter 2, verse 1 through 13, he's talking about showing partiality, making judgments. And then 14 through 26, he's talking about faith is evident, manifested by your works. It's not hypocritical. Faith is lived out. You know, this is an interesting list to me. It's interesting to see the qualities that James lists here that are evidence of wisdom from God. I guess I just didn't expect it. But like I said, I think I often see, and you know, I'm guilty of this too, that sometimes we use wisdom perhaps as a weapon against others, against things that we might consider to be worldly. And of course, I think wisdom combats the wisdom of the world. But I think James is making it clear the character of wisdom and how it should be practiced. And I think he calls into question our motivation of being wise and living a wise life. Is it to lift myself up? Is it to be boastful? Look how good my life is. You know, there's nothing wrong with my life. Or is it humble? And is it peacemaking? And I think that's what James is trying to get us to see here. And so, finally, James kind of ends this section with, it's almost like he's changing topics. I think he's kind of transitioning into the next section. But he says, the seed whose fruit is righteousness is shown in peace by those who make peace, or peacemakers. So he seems to have this special emphasis on making peace, and the ultimate fruit of this is righteousness. So when the source of our wisdom is from God, and when that fruit is evident in our life, we harvest this righteousness, we harvest this peace. It's when our lives are living in line with the way God wants them to be. And so the question that we have this morning is really, you know, James's first question there in verse 13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let it be shown by your good behavior and deeds, and the humility of wisdom. So the question is, you know, does our life reflect this wisdom from above, this wisdom from God? Or perhaps maybe the wisdom that you've been listening to is not really producing that good fruit in your life. Maybe it's more disorderly and chaotic. Maybe it's leading to sin in your life. I think we have here a really good reminder that we need to sometimes check and question our sources for advice on how to navigate life. You know, last week we talked about how wisdom is needed through necessary, it's vital for us to navigate trials in our life, and really all aspects of life. But the question is, where is that wisdom coming from? You know, where when you have some kind of issue, or disorder, or whatever it may be, I guess the question James is asking here is, well, are you wise? You know, where is that wisdom coming from? Is it shown in your life? Because where you get your wisdom from is going to affect what your life looks like. Now, again, you know, we have to remember that a lot of wisdom literature, it's not like a money-back guarantee. You know, they're good. I would say maybe good is not a strong enough word, but they're principles on which we should build our life. You know, so again, we talked about the one-liner that we like to quote, you know, train up a child in the Lord and they will not depart from it. And again, that's not a promise, but that's a really good principle to build your life on. And if that's where you're drawing your wisdom from, that fruit is going to show in your life. And, you know, if it's not there, like we learned last week, like we saw last week, ask God. He will give it to you generously. That, you know, that should become your prayer, that God gives you wisdom. And then I kind of wanted to throw in this idea of, I guess, what I would call tricky wisdom. I think James is also calling us to check our motives when it comes to wisdom in that fruit. How we live out our wisdom, we need to be reminded to check our motives, because wisdom should be expressed in humility, in gentleness, in peace, not my way or the highway or anything like that. We need to be careful about how we live out that wisdom, how we share it with others, that it's not contentious, that it's not unyielding. So I think we need to be careful about how we live that out. And then finally, does your life show that true wisdom? Is it reflected by the fruit that your life produces? And ultimately, this wisdom leads to an abundant life, because it's a gift from God above, and it helps us navigate life in a way that helps us produce a good life, because it's not our choices or it's not, you know, our best thinking, but we have a guide. We don't have to do it on our own. Again, we have an example. We have a Father who wants to guide us and show us that way. So this morning, I think we have something to give thanks for. We have something to give thanks for, and that is that we have a good gift from above. This wisdom to help, that I know that I don't have to do this or figure this out by myself, this whole life thing. That we can thank God for giving us good gifts from above. That He is the Father of lights, who does not vary. His intentions for us are clear. And so let's spend some time worshiping Him this morning. As we talked about last week, James draws a lot, I believe, from the Sermon on the Mount. And so I think the closing of Jesus' sermon here in chapter 7 is very fitting for what James is talking about. So Jesus ends this sermon in Matthew 5 through 7 by saying this: "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and who does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." So notice here, you know, Jesus is saying, you know, everyone's hearing the words that He just said. The wise person is the one who draws from that wisdom as their source and puts it into practice. It bears fruit. So it's not just about hearing it. It's the one who puts it into practice is the one who's wise. The one who hears it but does not put it into practice is the foolish person. So picture, if you will, a beach, you know, with the sand and the rocks and the waves coming in. You know, I don't know if this was necessarily like an ocean scene. Doesn't necessarily mention waves, but I think it still fits, right? So you're building your house on the sand, you got beachfront property, or you're building it on the rock next to it. And I think the ocean or the rain represents the changing tides of the world around us, the changing of culture, of whatever it may be. Things are changing, the waves come in and out. And if you've ever, you know, watched the tide come in and out, you can see what it does to the sand, especially over time. You know, if you build your little sandcastle kingdom right there on the beachfront, the waves are going to come, and they are going to crash against it, and after some time, it's not going to be there anymore. In contrast, if you build your house, if you build your life on the rock, if you've ever, you know, watched the waves crash against the rock, when that water hits the rock, I mean, it goes all over the place because the rock is strong. The waves can't break it down. The rock will break the waves. And so this is wisdom from above. Where are you drawing that wisdom from? Will ultimately determine where you're building your life. And if you're drawing that wisdom from God, you're building your life on that rock. And whatever shifts come, whatever waves come and crash against that, it's not saying that your life's going to be easy all the time, but it's going to stand firm because your life is built on Christ. The point is that if we don't have wisdom from God, if we draw our wisdom from all these other sources, our life's going to become disorderly. Our life's going to become chaotic. And there's going to be evil or immorality or sin in our lives because we're building our life on something that just frankly can't hold its own. It's like sandcastle kingdoms. So the question this morning is, what's your life built on? Where are you drawing your wisdom from, whatever challenges you're facing in life? Where's your source for that wisdom? And is that evident, is that demonstrated in your life? Wisdom from God is like building your house on a rock. James tells us that the fruit of our lives will demonstrate that and produce good fruit, and we will harvest righteousness. And the wisdom that is lived out is pure and peace-loving and considerate and willing to yield, full of mercy, impartial, and sincere. So the question we have this morning is where is that wisdom coming from, and how is that wisdom, what's that wisdom motivated from in our lives? So if there's anything you need this morning, any prayers, or if you need wisdom, let us know that. We wanna stand with you. We're here as a body with one another. So make any requests known as we stand and sing together.